Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. This is Steve Lenman. We're back on Gaza today. Gaza is a very, very important story. It's important because of more than just 140 square miles of territory in the Middle East, more than just the people isolated under siege, persecuted in one tiny corner of the planet. It's a story that really reverberates in many areas around the globe, and it happens too often, not just by Israel against Palestinians, by our own country, continually against people around the planet, certainly in Iraq and Afghanistan, and other places that there are no reports whatever on, or very, very few, and when they do come out through the major media, they're very distorted. People have no idea. There's nothing but the truth on this program, with important guests like my guest this morning, Larry Everest. Larry has been on before, and Larry is on important topics all the time. He speaks out. He writes about them. He's a dedicated activist, and it's the reason that having Larry on the program is so important. Larry is a longtime writer. He's an author. He's written about the Middle East, about other areas. He writes for the Revolutionary Work and newspaper. His articles appear in many publications. He's a frequent contributor to Pacifica Radio, KPFA in Berkeley. Larry has written about Gaza. He's got a brand new article out on it that he sent me this morning. He calls it Gaza Update, the blood-soaked U.S.-Israeli ceasefire indeed. Larry, welcome to the program, and I would add one. Well, I'll add a lot of things. I'll let you add most of them, but I would say I think ceasefire is a rather inappropriate term. I would call it a pause between one violent act and the next one that certainly is coming down the road, and this has gone on for decades. Larry, welcome to the program.
Stephen, nice to be with you. Thank you.
Oh, you got my email this morning that I'm also trying to connect for a very brief segment with Iyad Sarraj.
Yeah, good. That'd be important. Yeah.
If we can get him. He was on last week, but the connection was so bad, I wanted to get him back on again. Have we connected with him? You're still working on it, Kerry.
Whenever you do, just we'll stop, and that's an important update.
We'll let him make some comments about what's going on right now. But, Larry, again, we're both on this story. It's crucially important. We can't let the momentum die. We just have to keep pushing on this. There may be an opportunity for the first time. There really is so much mass world outrage that it gives me hope that maybe something can come out of this.
Well, I think you're right that there's certainly potential, and I agree with your point. I mean, look, for 22 days, Israel just pummeled one of the most besieged people in the world, as you were pointing out, in an area the size of Detroit, relatively unarmed people, despite all the propaganda about these homemade rockets and so on from Hamas. They're just being pummeled by this high-tech U.S.-supplied military. The latest count I saw was 1,260 Palestinians killed, over 5,000 wounded, a third of them, over 350 children slaughtered, whole areas reduced to rubble. Now the Palestinians are even able to go dig through all the
Larry,
wreckage.
Let me interrupt. That music means a break is coming. I've seen a slightly higher death count, but roughly in the same ballpark. Let's take the break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm on with Larry Everest. Let me mention also globalresearch.ca makes this possible, and my co-host and editor, Michelle Chosudovsky. And one more thing, Larry, if you'd allow me to do this. I had a wonderful thing happen to me this morning. I got an email from Dirk Andrian. Oh, I can't pronounce his name. Andreessens of the Brussels Tribunal.
Right, that's right. Andreessens, right.
Mm-hmm. He sent me an email. They wanted to post all my Gaza articles. He sent me a link connected to my blog site and to globalresearch.ca. And I looked at the membership. You're a member. I noticed that Michelle Chosudovsky is a member. And Dirk asked me if I would like to become a member. What an honor. I didn't read his email carefully the first time. I went back and read it again, sent him another email, and said, what a great honor to be asked. I absolutely would be greatly honored to be a member of the tribunal. And I guess you've been associated with it for a while.
Well, I met them in Istanbul. They were part of the World Tribunal on Iraq.
Yes.
War crimes in Iraq, which, of course, are connected to what we're talking about regarding Gaza today.
Well, we will get back to Gaza, but I thought I would mention that this is what makes it all worthwhile for me, Larry, to get this kind of feedback. And whether we're talking about Gaza or all the other things that concern us so much, and there'll be others. This one will subside a little bit for a while, and we'll go on to the next crisis. And then, but the Middle East never goes away, Larry. We know that. And it bothers me. It bothers you that we're not talking more about Iraq these days, because I don't see today. Of course, is Obama's day, and I refer to him as George Bush's third term. I don't see much of any change coming once he takes the oath, and I don't even know what time he takes it.
Well, he's going to take it in about 50 minutes, but should we talk about Obama or Gaza?
Well, let's talk about Gaza. Let's talk about Gaza.
Well, the thing I wanted to mention, and I do want to talk some about Obama, because it's very, his selection, and I underscore selection, as president is very significant, but not for the reasons that people think it is. And it is actually connected to Gaza in the sense that, what happened in Gaza really shows the profundity and the sharpness of the contradictions across the Middle East, whether we're looking in Israel, Palestine, whether we're looking at Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, very, very sharp contradictions on one hand, on the other, very, very violent and, genocidal, vicious efforts by U.S. imperialism and its client state Israel to hold on to power. And you mentioned the point that this is an opportunity to wake people up about the crimes committed by Israel. I agree with that, but I think the key thing is people have to understand what the state of Israel is. The state of Israel is not a representative of the real interests of Jews across the world, or some kind of bringing democracy to the Middle East, or prevention of further crimes, Holocaust, etc., against other people. Israel is a settler colonial state based on the expulsion and ethnic cleansing of Palestine, and most importantly, it's an outpost and a military gendarme for imperialism, U.S. imperialism in particular. And because of this nature of this state, it has no legitimacy whatsoever. It has no right to exist. And
I agree with you 100%.
I think it's important for people to see to find out the truth about Israel, because as I know you know, Stephen, in 1948, Planned a Lot, there was a conscious effort to expel the Palestinian people, who, by the way, had nothing whatsoever to do with the Holocaust. But two-thirds of the population, nearly 800,000 people, were expelled, and the purpose of this was to create, and this goes back to the 1917 and even earlier, the entire conception of British and then U.S. support for Israel was to create what one British official called a loyal Ulster. In other words, like the town in Northern Ireland, a loyal Ulster in a sea of Arabs. In other words, this is a region crucial to global domination because of its oil resources and its geopolitical location. There's ever since World War One and all the stories we've read about Lawrence of Arabia, there's been a striving by the peoples of the Middle East for liberation and for independence.
And this, well, we both know that the idea behind Balfour in 1917,
right.
oil was found in the region. They didn't know how much, didn't realize then the amount that we know exists there today. But it was enough, and the Brits wanted to dominate it, and they wanted a Western presence in that in the Arab world. They would not trust Arabs with all that oil, let alone let them have any more than they had to give them. So the Jews wanted a homeland. Zionism was born in the late 19th century, and in one short paragraph. The British crown designated a place in Palestine for Jews, and in the same duplicitous statement, Larry, I quoted in my new article, I've got another one that's just about done, I quoted, they said something to the effect that, well, of course, this won't do anything to renounce the claims of the indigenous Arab people now living there. What a bunch of rubbish. The Brits didn't give a damn about the Arab people living there.
Exactly, and one of the things that I traced in my book, Oil, Power, and Empire, Iraq and the U.S. Global Agenda, is the fact that this was the same period the state of Iraq was created by the British.
Oh, indeed.
All of it was part of the imperialist division and border drawing in the Middle East when the British really replaced the Ottoman Empire as the key power. But I think that this is so important because people feel somehow that the Israeli lobby, Israel is dictating to the United States. No, the U.S. imperialists understand that they need a military force right in the region. One of Barack Obama's supporters, Steve Rothman, a representative, said, look, the United States would need 100,000 more troops in the Middle East were it not for Israel. And he goes on and describes all the different dimensions of U.S. Of Israeli assistance to the United States and, intelligence and so on. And I think that when people say these things about the Israel, and I'm not saying there isn't an Israel lobby or it doesn't have influence, but when they say these things, they're not looking at the basic fact that the U.S. is the dominant force in this entire region.
Larry,
it is actively oppressing and strangling people there. Israel is a key means through which it does it, but certainly not the only means. So we really have to, I think it's crucial that people see, and the blood shed in Gaza and these horrible pictures that we're seeing, this is on the U.S.'s hands just as much as Israel. Israel couldn't do anything it's doing. Even the weapons that it's using and the airplanes are from the United States, the political support, the Obama's silence, Bush regime blocking any sort of ceasefire. So all of this, I think, again, this state is simply, and it's like apartheid South Africa in the sense it's a creation of imperialism to rule over a region of key concern for these global powers.
There's no question about it. And there's a partnership, as we both know, Larry, Washington, or the West in general with Israel. And it really, talk about an axis of evil. There is an axis of evil. But once in a while I like to quote Israel's George Washington, David Ben-Gurion, Israel's first prime minister. I quote him again in my new article back in 1948, the year Israel became a state. And his words, we have taken their country. We must do everything to ensure they never return. We must use terror, assassination, intimidation, land confiscation, and the cutting of all social services to rid the Galilee of its Arab population. In other words, get rid of all the Arabs. Yitzhak Shamir, a former terrorist with the Stern Gang. I don't think he was the leader, but he was one of the leaders of the Stern Gang terrorist group pre-1948. I quote him in this article, 1988, a speech before Jewish settlers in occupied Palestine. Palestinians, quote, would be crushed like grasshoppers with their heads smashed against the boulders and walls. This is from a prime minister.
Yeah.
How the man talks like this. And there are so many more quotes just like this, Larry.
Well, that's so important for people to get that history and to learn about it now. And I think, and this is something, I mean, people can find my articles at the Revolution website, www.revcom.us. Many of them are also on my website, LarryEverest.com. But it's really important for people to understand this. And I think we got a break.
We got another break coming up, Larry.
Okay.
Let's take the break. We'll be right back.
Okay.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to the News Hour. Larry, we've got another break at the bottom of the half hour. Before you pick it up, let me just throw a few facts on the table, a reminder for some listeners, for others who don't know, just a very brief clarification. Hamas was democratically elected in January 2006. The organization was born in the late 1980s, around the time of the first Palestinian Intifada. At the time, Israel supported Hamas against Arafat and the PLO, because Israel wants subservient Palestinian allies. They want none that are independent and want to govern their own people. Israel wants total control. They have it in Fatah today under Mahmoud Abbas, the appointed Prime Minister Salam Fayyad, a guy who was so unpopular that when he ran in the 2006 legislative elections, he got less than 2.5% of the vote. Now he's the prime minister. Illegitimate. He's also a former IMF and World Bank executive. These are the kind of people Israel wants running the Palestinians and being enforcers for them. Now Hamas is called a terrorist organization. They are not a terrorist organization. They are a legitimate government. They have a defense wing. I don't call them militants. I call them honest resistance. International law sanctions honest resistance. They have homemade weapons. Israel has the most modern weapons and technology in the world. They get them from us. Billions and billions and billions of our money, of our tax money, goes to fund the Israeli killing machine. This is the way our government uses our money, to fund our own killing machine. This is what goes on. We need to support honest resistance. Anyway, I could go on and on, Larry, but you pick it up before the break of the half hour.
Well, a couple of things. First of all, the war Israel's fighting is very clear, and this is something I document in my articles, is a war against the Palestinian people. It's not simply a war against Hamas. I think, I don't feel Hamas is a path to liberation or a real rupture from imperialism. I think we need a different way than either imperialism or Islamic fundamentalism. But the key thing is to see that this is a whole war against the Palestinian people and a continuation of this whole 60-year effort to ethnically cleanse and destroy the Palestinian people and prevent the emergence of any kind of a state. And I think it's one thing I want to underscore is it's really urgent that people continue to speak out and resist this, because while there's a temporary ceasefire, I think you were right at the top of the hour, you called it a pause. Gaza is still being strangled. The strangulation could intensify. People don't have enough food. They don't have water. They don't have sanitation. Even before the attack on Gaza, what was going on there was a war crime, according to Richard Falk, the UN rapporteur on the situation. So people need to keep speaking out and condemning what Israel and the United States is doing. But I just want to go back for a minute. You know, there's a huge irony here. Israel is supposedly formed because of the Holocaust. The Holocaust was an excuse, but Israel has nothing to do with preventing another Holocaust on the Jews or anyone else. In fact, the state of Israel is the worst thing that's happened to the Jews since the Holocaust. And I say this as someone whose grandparents were Jews who fled Eastern Europe before the Russian Revolution in the early 1900s. Israel is not something that's in the interest of the Jews. It's one of the worst things. And what makes it so bad, and Alan Goodman's written a very powerful article on this at revcom.us, is that here's the irony. The Holocaust wasn't the crime of Hitler the madman. It was a crime of imperialism. Hitler was was an imperialist. Germany was a capitalist imperialist state. It committed these enormous crimes of the Holocaust. So what do the Zionists do? They ally with the same system of imperialism. They just pick the winning side and serve that same system that has created the Holocaust in the first place. And Jews historically have been on the side of the oppressed in many, many, I mean, this is complicated, you know. In many cases, Jews have stood with the oppressed, and the state of Israel has caused many Jews to sell their soul to the same system that has committed so many crimes against the Jews and many others throughout history, and turned way too many people into supporters of these kinds of atrocities. So I think that it's a bitter irony, and it shows you what happens if you're not thinking about humanity, if you're just thinking about, well, my people were hurt, so therefore I have the right to do anything to anyone that I feel like. And, you know, there's an analogy here for the upper class, for the black middle class and upper class. Yes, there's, you know, there's been a horrible national oppression throughout the history of the United States for 400 years, but the solution to that isn't aligning with that same system now that you have that some black faiths, some are going to have the opportunity to participate at the highest level in running this criminal empire.
Larry, absolutely. We need to take another break. Let's do.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm on with Larry Evers. We're talking about Gaza. Larry, Israel has been very adept, just like we are in this country, at creating myths. It invents its own history, its own rationale for its existence and what it's been doing. The idea of the Holocaust with a capital H, like there have never been any other Holocausts in world history. The notion of, you can almost put it in quotes, unique Jewish suffering, like no people ever suffered more than Jews suffered. It really is pretty outrageous stuff. And talking about Holocaust, I don't think there were ever two more sizable Holocausts than the one our own country, Larry, committed against our own native people and against the people, the black African people, who were kidnapped and brought to the so-called New World, not just America, I mean throughout the New World, but we were probably the leading culprit in this, and millions died in the Middle Passage and how they were treated here. But Hitler got his idea for what he wanted to do. We were his model. What we did to our native people was his model for what he intended to do, not just to Jews, but more to Slavic people than to Jewish people, to gypsies, to the unwanted people that he wanted to pursue his imperial agenda, just like Israel and America pursue their imperial agendas. You co-opt, you remove, you destroy, you mass slaughter, you do any damn thing you want, because in Israel's case, it wants dominion over the Middle East, and we want dominion over planet Earth and space and everything else. And again, it's a very hideous partnership, Larry. Heaven help planet Earth if a way isn't found to stop this.
Well, and you know, in one of my articles, I said that blaming Hamas for starting this whole carnage is like blaming the Native Americans because they dared to resist genocide, and then looking at, well, Native Americans attacked a wagon train. They started this whole thing, you know, and just walking into the movie in the middle of it and not seeing what's preceded it at all. And I completely agree with your point that what's happened to the Jews isn't detached from history. It's part of history. It's an important part to learn from, but in the context of the whole of the dynamics of human society as a whole, not some special category. And this special category argument's used to give Israel a blank check to do whatever it feels like. And of course, any oppressed people can use that same logic to commit, to use oppression as an excuse to commit great crimes against other people. And of course, I'm a communist, so I want to see the liberation of all humanity, and my viewpoint is starting from the interests of all humanity and liberating all humanity, not this or that particular nation or group being the dominant power. But I want to say a few words about Obama, and I think your point about the Middle Passage, I want to pick up on that, because you know, today is inauguration. Obama's going to be inaugurated in about 20 minutes, and millions and millions and millions of people are excited by, inspired by, hopeful about, and so on. And on one hand, one can understand this in the sense that, look, for 400 years, 200-some years of this country's existence, African Americans were first enslaved and then brutalized and still are today. And the notion that that an African American could be president to many people is sending them, or they're interpreting this to mean that fundamental change is afoot in the United States, that this long nightmare of national oppression is over, and many people are hopeful that it means that all the crimes we've seen under the Bush regime, the torture, the wars, are over. But I think that people have to look at the bigger picture here and stop drinking the Obama-lade, as Glenn Ford put it on Black Agenda Report. Barack Obama, yes, this is a momentous occasion, but not for the reasons that people think that it is. Obama has been put in office by the rulers of this system to try to bring this country together, because they're in deep, deep trouble. And as Lenin put it back in World War I, never do the ruling classes need the allegiance of the population so much as at times of deep crisis. And I think there are two incidents that I think really crystallize this. One is Gaza, which we've just talked about. The other is the murder. And I'm out in Oakland, Berkeley area, and on January 1st, Oscar Grant, 22-year-old African-American man was shot in the back by the police as he lay on the ground handcuffed. And this has sparked a revolt here in Oakland and just tremendous anger. And what do those two examples say? They say, first of all, that, and this is after Obama has been elected, so what does that tell us? A, these kinds of crimes, Gaza and Oscar Grant, are a product of the system. They're not a, the system does not change because a different individual has been chosen to be the administrator of it and leader of it. Those contradictions are very profound. They're very deep, and they're actually getting more intense, not better. They're not being mitigated. They're not going away. They're getting sharper. And finally, what has Obama's response been to both Gaza and Oscar Grant? Silence. Silence, it meaning support for A, the Israelis in the Gaza assault. He had no problem speaking out about the economy or Mumbai or other topics, but when it came to Gaza, not a word.
Larry
and
Everett.
And then Oscar Grant, this brutal murder of a young African American, not a word from Obama, which tells us right there that he is a representative of the system. He's not changing the system, and it's that system of capitalism and all the class divisions and ideological brainwashing and structure that serve that system that's creating these horrors. And Obama has been put in power because that system is in deep, deep trouble.
Oh, there's no question, and there's no question also that it seems at this time in our history, with the greatest ever, the potentially greatest ever economic crisis, I think it's the greatest ever. I think that'll be apparent in future months. But it is very, very grave, plus everything going on around the world. It's a very clever subterfuge to have an eloquent black face represent the country, and as you say, to present the illusion that something really is changing. I refer to Obama as George Bush's third term. James Petras, who's been on this program a few times, he'll be back next month. He wrote two important articles about Obama. He calls him the greatest con man in recent history, and he also calls him the first Jewish president. I mean, he was spotted early as a student at Harvard Law School. And he was singled out as a comer, and he was brought along, and he was vetted and indoctrinated and so on. And he was basically just the Jewish community alone in Chicago. Chicago, an important Jewish city like New York, like Los Angeles, big population, influential people, people in government, business, and so on. And they picked him as a guy that they decided would be very reliable. And a key old-time Jewish Chicago leader, Abner Victor, a former judge, served, I believe, in the Clinton administration. He coined the term the first Jewish president. Well, I think that's part of Obama's role, but as you say, I mean, he is there to serve the imperial state, and he knows what his job is. And I call him safe. He is safe. He would never rise this high if the powers that be, the people, the kingmakers, the people who choose the leaders, put them in the most powerful positions, whether it's president or house speaker, whatever it is. They only choose the safe people, and once in a while they may make a mistake, so they rectify it. They can get rid of people as easily as they can make them. So Obama is about to take the oath of office shortly, and to me it's a day of mourning. It's not a day of celebration, because it'll be more of the same. Even so many smart people, Larry, who really believe that, well, you know, just we're not sure, but maybe something really is going to change, they will see in the weeks and months ahead it's the same old system, the same old deal. And what I wrote about him, Larry, I wrote about all of his key appointees. And if that doesn't make a slam dunk case for what he will do as president. I don't know what does. It's the same roguish cast of characters. Just on the economic side, it's the same damn crew that sowed the seeds under Bill Clinton to create the problem that George Bush let flourish in the 8 years that he was president, and to get us into the god-awful economic mess we're in now. And the national security team, from Hillary Clinton to General Jones at National Security, I mean, it goes on and on. I mean, just a rogues gallery team of key officials that will just achieve continuity from everything that's gone on prior to him. It's not changed,
well, you know,
to believe in.
I think there's continuity and change. I mean, the it's interesting. The Washington Post ran an article in which Obama was saying, look, the problem with Bush is that he's looked at Israel, Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan as separate issues, but they're one issue, and we're going to look at this region as a whole. And I think there will be certain changes that take place in policy, but the point is they're designed to serve and strengthen imperialism. So what is a good thing about that? People are comparing Obama to FDR. Look, one FDR was enough. What is so wonderful about saving world capitalism with all the horrors it's unleashed on the planet and now threatens the environmental destruction of the planet since the United States won World War II? So they're changes, but they're not fundamental. And this is why I think we're in a period, and I really hope people, listen to your program, read these other information, subscribe to Revolution Newspaper, where we cover this every week, and you can go to the website and get a free e-subscription or subscribe to the print edition. That's where you're going to read my writings. We need to really expose to people that it is the system. And the other thing about Obama, a lot of people think, what harm could he do? He can do a lot of harm because his mission is to try to revive, you know, the spirit of service. And he's giving, that's the thrust apparently of his inaugural address, a new period of responsibility and service to the greater good. But what is he talking about? He's talking about service to this system. What's the logic of that? The logic is young high school kids signing up for the military to go fight in Afghanistan, because now Obama's the commander in chief. So this is very harmful. What is so good about bringing the country together and making people proud of America? That is very, very harmful. There's nothing to be proud of about the actions and the impact and the nature of this system. You know, I'm looking at Alternet, before we got on, Steve, and there was an article, Barack Obama signals the end to the culture war, and my first response was, what's wrong with a culture war? I was around in the 60s. I'm glad people revolted against patriarchy and American chauvinism and racism. That was the culture, and I'm certainly glad that we young people declared war on it and broke away from it, and the problem was that the struggle didn't go far enough. But the final thing I just want to say here again, these are the kind of periods of extreme crisis in which the emergence of a revolutionary crisis is actually possible, and the rulers of this country understand that much better than most people do, and again, I would encourage, and I'm dedicated to building a revolutionary movement to bring in a whole different world and a much to get rid of capitalism and everything that goes along with it. And I'd encourage again, this is a bigger topic maybe for next time, but I'd really encourage people to look at the newspaper revolution, to look at Bob Avakian's work on re-envisioned revolution and communism, and to look at the strategy and the program that's been developed by him and the Revolutionary Communist Party, because I think we're in this kind of a situation where there could be real change, real fundamental change, which of course would be something that would change the whole world, and not in the way Obama's doing. His change is to try to protect the status quo and all this oppression and U.S., as you were mentioning, U.S. imperialism around the world, but a profound and liberating change. And I think we have the opportunity, if we understand it and seize on it, potentially to make a change unlike anything history's ever seen, which you know, could save humanity. And I don't think that's an exaggeration.
We have to do it. Our backgrounds are so different, Larry, but I agree with you fundamentally. I'm a product of the Wharton School. In my lifetime, I've lived long enough to see what's going on, to get more and more discouraged about the system that I was indoctrinated in, and the last 8 years, especially under George Bush. If that doesn't make a slam dunk case that our way of doing things is just hopelessly wrong. The more we do, the worse things get, whether it's economically, politically, socially. We need change, and of course when you say revolution, revolution means change. It doesn't mean that we go out in the street and start slaughtering people. We need change, constructive change. We need to take a break right now. Let's do that, and we'll come back, and we've got a few minutes left, Larry. We'll do the best we can in a short time. Welcome back to the News Hour. Larry, we just have a couple of minutes left. The hour just flies by as it always does. And I sure hope you'll come back and we'll pick it up.
Yeah, a lot to talk about.
Oh, let's give Obama a chance to check out the White House, figure out where all the bathrooms and closets are and so on. And we can come back and we can, with a little evidence, we can make good guesses now what's going to happen. We'll see him in action, and we can talk about what he's actually doing. But
You know, one thing I just wanted to pick up. I mean, your comment on revolution. To be clear, I mean, we're not in a revolutionary crisis at the moment, and what we have to do right now is political, ideological education of people and organizing people to resist the main ways this system oppresses people, whether it be supporting the slaughter in Gaza, murdering African Americans, or refusing to prosecute war criminals. There are demonstrations around this right now. I saw an arrest Bush sign even on NBC's coverage. They got that. And revolution is an act of millions and millions of people. It's not, as you're saying, small groups running around doing crazy things. That's not the point. It's an act of millions and millions of people. And I think now it's very important to be exposing the nature of what's going on to people, because we know these contradictions. You had mentioned the economic crisis earlier. That has not gone away. That is likely going to get even more sharp and profound. These wars are escalating. Obama wants to send another 30,000 troops to Afghanistan. These kinds of things, we need to really build mass resistance and also tear the veil off people's eyes. And one of the significant things about this rebellion in Oakland is it just shows that, look, reality is stronger than whatever propaganda they're going to try to sell people. I mean, here it was, the year of Obama. All this is supposed to be different. No, it wasn't.
Let me throw in a quick comment. A great contrast between our country and Venezuela I like to make. In Venezuela, Hugo Chavez uses the national revenue to provide social services to the people. In our country, if this doesn't explain how broken our system is and we need a new one, We use our tax dollars to fight foreign wars that do nothing for UI and people listening to this program, to reward bankers for creating a global economic crisis. We're looting the national treasury. Our tax dollars, our money, we've discussed this in this program, Larry. We're undergoing and have for many years a massive wealth transfer from the people listening to this program and so many millions of others to the top 1% in the country. What kind of a system is that? We need to get rid of this system. We need to get a system that works for all the people of the country. We don't have that kind of system now. That's what I want.
You know, exactly. I mean, we're witnessing, you know, after years of being told that capitalism no longer had crises, that capitalism was the best way for everyone to prosper, blah, blah, blah. You know, this is a crisis of capitalism, and Obama's being put in office to try to save capitalism. That's why he, Bush, and McCain, there wasn't an inch worth of difference between them on this whole bailout, which is now $3 trillion. And I know you write on Global Research, their website, and Raymond Lotta has posted articles there. He writes for Revolution Newspaper as well. That's another very important and insightful analysis on this whole economic crisis that people can find at revcom.us as well as on the Global Research website.
Larry, I hate to cut you off, but we're just about at the end of the string. Will you come back and we'll pick this up in a future program?
Oh, sure. No, anytime. Just give me a call.